Rapes are down about 2%. Robberies are up about 18%. We continue to see a rise in ag assaults, particularly in Central Division and Central Bureau. And our total violent crime picture is 27.4% increase. Burglaries, we struggle with burglaries so far this year. 26% increase compared to last year, and a 3.9 increase compared to 13. Some of that is reflected because of January's low status last year. Motor vehicle thefts, 12% increase. Burglary theft from vehicle, 12% increase. And personal thefts, about a 6.5% decrease. Total property crime, a 7.9% increase. Gives us a total Part 1 crime picture for this year over last year of 11.1% increase, and a 6% increase if you were to compare us with the same time, 2013. The most severely impacted bureau is Central Bureau, followed by West Bureau, then South Bureau, and then the bureau with the lowest increase is Valley Bureau. And Valley Bureau stands at a 6.5% increase over last year and 3.4% decrease over 13. Gang crime, we have an incremental increase in overall gang crime of 3.4% compared to last year, but it's a decrease compared to 13 of 7.6%. Traffic collisions, we've seen an increase in overall traffic collisions of just at 10%, but total significant traffic collisions, those that involve injuries or fatalities, are down about 27%. DUI-related or driving influence-related are down 15.7%. And hit and runs, which of course is a huge topic of conversation, are down about 12.5% compared to 2013, and are down almost 15% compared to 2014. Serious hit and runs, those that involve injuries or deaths, are down 16.7%. Our motor vehicle versus pedestrians are down overall. And the serious incidents in motor vehicle versus pedestrian are down 26%. Bicycle-involved incidents are down 15.4% in the city, and those involving serious injury are down 72%. But again, you know, when you look at statistics such as that one, those are heavily impacted by the low numbers and the start of the year. So, you know, all these things are indicators, but they are certainly not patterns at this point in the year. Sworn personnel, we have 9,906 sworn personnel, 2,616 civilian. We have just under 450 police reserve officers, 373 specialist volunteers, 62 chaplains, and 6,074 cadets in our program. And that concludes my report.
Questions of the chief, anybody? Chief, on the tick up. There are numbers of reasons, but is early release playing a role in this? Our different improved reporting. There've got to be just a number of reasons, but what are we looking at?
Well, there are a number of reasons. You know, we have a significant increase in domestic violence reporting. That is a reason. We've changed the way that we classify some kinds of lower level assaults and have raised our classification up. That's also a part of it. This time last year, for example, brandishing a weapon wouldn't have been categorized as a Part 1 crime, but we've included that now. So that has some effect on it. But there is also a real increase in a number of categories. I mean, we have made no differentiation in the way we classify any of our property crimes, and they are up significantly. It's early in the year, and the best way to measure these things is over longer periods of time. Any of you can recall the conversations we were having in these meetings last year, you know, we were talking about double-digit decreases in almost every crime category, and that just is a reflection of, you know, the short period of time. So You know, we are concerned about it. I just left a crime briefing upstairs which had all the assistant chiefs in it and many of the staff officers, and we're talking about the reapportionment of resources. We've been doing that since the year began. You know, I invite the commission, if they're interested, to go up and see the situation room, which is adjacent to my office. First thing I do when I check in every morning is to go there and get briefed on crime overnight. This past, as an example, you know, South Bureau saw a significant uptick in violent crime in the previous week. We redeployed resources, including Metropolitan Division and motor officers, and were able to get a slight decline over this week, and actually a pretty good weekend for that bureau. But that always comes at a cost. And while we saw a decrease in South Bureau, we saw a slight increase in Central Bureau and in Valley Bureau. So
that's where the deployment came from?
Well, the deployment comes from all over the city.
Yeah, of course.
But part of it comes from there, yeah. So, you know, you're always, when you have a small police department and you are struggling to meet adequate staffing resources, and you're trying to put your crime suppression groups in the places where the most crime is, you know, you can't be everywhere at once, and that is the reality of policing Los Angeles.
And what about early release and you know, overcrowding of the system to where
AB 109 was in effect in 2013, the lowest crime year Los Angeles has ever had. You know, Prop 47 is new, and you know, but it's still way too early to attribute. You know, I mean, believe me, it would be my best interest is blame this all on Prop 47 and walk away. But
sure.
that's not accurate. You know, we have to examine Prop 47 and see what its real impact is, and it's just way too early in the year to be able to tell that. Way too early, but we will, and you know, the entire state looks to see how this will impact. And then with Prop 47, you have to recognize that whatever benefit it has wouldn't be realized early on, because the decrease in crowding has not been replaced by the increase in sentencing for those convicted of serious crimes. So, you know, it's unfair to judge it at this point, because there are many people that think 47 is a bad idea, but there are parts to it that could positively impact public safety, but those parts really haven't taken effect yet. Mm-hmm. The immediate lower level of charging has taken effect, but the positive result of having less people in state prison hasn't.
I just wanted to let you know that after last week, I've talked to a number of the foundations and philanthropic groups that care deeply about the underserved, and I think they're all looking in the mirror now and also going to start doubling down to be supportive, because we have a lot of great service providers that are also underfunded that hopefully can have some impact on this.
Well, absolutely, and I know, of course, we are both looking in the same places for this. You know, the city wants to be able to fund DART teams in 10 more divisions. You know, that's a significant impact on domestic violence. You know, getting at the root cause of domestic violence is in everybody's best interest. You know, whether it directly affects your household or you're just affected by the fact that households that have domestic violence produce, you know, broken children that offend at a much higher rate than other folks.
Good. Thank you, sir.
And we do have one public comment card. We have Mr. Ted Hayes.
Thank you. This may sound trivial, but while it's still reverberating, why is it the only person I can hear is the chief? I don't want to pick on anybody, but some people speak so softly, even though it's amplified, cannot be heard. Now, Chief, I want to talk about something very dangerous. It's called the disappeared. We know this takes place south of the border. I was arrested, and there's no record of my arrest. The jailers would say they have been told never to speak to me about my arrest. When because of my age, I must be examined by a physician, and they must make a report. but there's no record of the physician's report. Now, when I was being examined by the physician, he called in a jailer and told the jailer, either feed this man or release him. The jailer said, doctor, we're not going to do either one. So they kept me. I was transported to the traffic division on Wall Street. The sheriff has no record of my being there. I went to Discovery, LAPD Discovery. They have no record of my being arrested in 2014. So I'm disappeared. I do not exist. Now, that would be fine if I had escaped, but I didn't. I was there, and I know it. And I've been complaining about this for quite some time. Nowhere can I go, can I get resolution, some sort of answer of why the Discovery, the doctors, the jailers, the sheriff department, and all these people claim they never saw me on three occasions of arrest in 2014. So that's dangerous for our society. They have a system that's so corrupt they can disappear people in 2015.
Thank you. Item number three, the report of the executive director, Mr. T. Fink.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the commission. No report today.
Thank you. Item number four, report of the inspector general, Mr. Bustamante.
And good morning, commissioners. Just a brief update on some training that we did last Friday at the California Endowment Center. We had sponsored a full day of training for California law enforcement agencies as well as oversight agencies throughout California. And with the sponsoring and help of the Police Protective League and the Eagle and Badge Foundation, we were able to put together a pretty nice training that focused on everything from community outreach and things that we learned through the SARS program to use of force and some of the other investigative techniques and things that we've been doing with our office. So it's it was very successful, and I want to thank the PPL and Eagle and Badge for their support. My hope is that we'll continue to do this on an annual basis.
Good.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Item number five consists of information items and filed items relative to noise variances and special event permits submitted for the period ending February 6, 2015. Item number six, presentations. Do we have any presentations?
None today.
Thank you. Item number seven is consent agenda items. These items are considered to be routine and non-controversial, upon which the board is provided with adequate information for approval without inquiry or discussion. Would a commissioner wish to pull an item as special 7A through 7P?
Mr. President, although I don't think it's controversial, I would like to make a brief comment on three items, and fellow commissioners may as well, H, J, and K. So I move approval of item 7A, B, C, D, E, F, G, J, L, M, N, O, P.
Thank you.
Rob, I think you said you're going to take J out and then put
right.
J in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're going to remove approval of all the other ones.
Yes. I would like to make brief comments on H, J, and K, and I move approval of the remainder of the items.
I'll second that with thanks to the donors, but I would like, I noticed that Jim Wyatt, the president of the Los Angeles Police Foundation, and Cecilia Glassman, the executive director, are here, and I want to make sure that they get an opportunity to speak, and I don't know how to do that legally.
I think on J,
then you have to pull it.
I'm pulling H, J, and K, and I will certainly invite them to speak on J.
Okay, good. Great.
If that works for you.
So we have a motion and a second for the others. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Great.
Okay, we'll begin with item 7H. Department's report dated February 13, 2015, relative to the donation of the renewal of the contract for Dr. Craig D. Uchida to provide professional services relative to analyzing the department's service to the community, valued at $49,996.55 from the Los Angeles Police Foundation for the benefit of the Los Angeles Police Department.
Thank you. I want to thank the Police Foundation. And second, I just wanted to confirm that I think it's March 17th. We have a report coming back to us which will include information about some of the activities going on under this contract.
Good morning, Commissioners. R. Follicon, Special Assistant for Constitutional Policing. I will have to check with Ms. Goodrich on that particular report. This is monies that are related to some statistical analyses that I and others are working on. But I can confirm that, and you can get.
If you would just let me know,
Commissioners, I can confirm that that is scheduled for March 17th. In my conversation with Ms. Goodrich. Great. And she also indicated there'd be a presentation at that day by Dr. Yoshida also.
Great. I move approval of item 7H.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's do J.
Item J is one of two items
on the agenda, Jim?
That relate to donations to purchase the body-worn cameras. And I just wanted to add, I assume, the thanks of my fellow commissioners, and obviously hold it to give President Soboroff a chance to comment, but this is extremely important. It's a significant amount of money, and I wanted to thank you for that, and that's the reason I asked to hold it.
Yeah. Comments? I just want to thank the foundation. You made a difficult task easy. You allowed the department to do the kind of due diligence that it needed to do on an arm's length basis without telling them what to do, so we could procure the goods and services that we needed without any undue influence. And it's a pleasure. And then the add-on of the additional $250,000 is just really really remarkable. And you guys are appreciated, and I hope that you will give a shout out about your upcoming event, because it's pretty special coming up.
Well, Jim.
Well, I wanted to thank you for your comments, and Steve, who I've known for a long time, thank you for everything you've done for the foundation, because you've really helped us help the commission and the police force with the raising of this money. So we have a great debt of gratitude to you. So thank you very much for doing it. And just in terms of the event coming up, and then I'll let Cecilia talk, on May 16th at upstairs at LA Live, we're going to be honoring the new Clippers owner, Steve Ballmer. And it's the only thing he's agreed to do now that he's spending more time in Los Angeles and bought a house here, but it's the only thing he's agreed to be honored for. So we were very, very fortunate that he agreed to do it, and he recognizes the importance of the police department and how safe it's been made around Staples Center and what they're doing. So he was really good about agreeing to do it, and we were really, really fortunate to get him. With that, I'll let Cecilia.
Well, I think Jim has spoken to everything, but I do want to thank the commission. I want to thank Steve Soboroff specifically in the raising of the funds for the on-body cameras. And I want to thank my board, because they saw the importance of the cameras and added an additional $250,000 to it.
Wonderful.
So did you?
Yep.
Okay.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
One final comment, and then I'll move approval of the item. I just also want to thank you for the many things you do that behind the scenes. In one of those sort of odd connections, you were in a meeting recently with staff from the David Bonnet Foundation. David Bonnet Foundation provides some funding to the department with respect to the LGBT activities, and I serve on the board of that foundation. But to hear back from the staff up through the back to that board about the extraordinary work you're doing, I appreciate it, and not surprised, but I do think there are a lot of things we just don't know about that are so
well,
positive.
Well, that particular foundation, I want to say, has been really generous to the Police Foundation in their support of the department. Specifically, the grant that we got was for gun violence. So it's for the symposium that's going to be held.
Thank you. I move approval of item 7J.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, stay up for K.
And then item K, I held simply because it sounds significant and important to me. This is funding to provide the availability of a centralized location of the homicide library. And I would like to, not asking for a presentation today, although you're welcome to talk about it a little bit, but would like to ask for a report from the department later at some point when it's appropriate to explain more about it to us, because I think
I would like to hear a couple minutes, okay. A minute or two on it, and I know the chief is very involved in this as well.
I'm happy to hear it. I just didn't want to. If you weren't prepared, I didn't want to suggest you should have been.
I try to be prepared.
He's prepared.
Just as long as I don't have
He's
to go to law school.
He's good and prepared for this.
Thank you for being here.
Good morning. What this project is there are approximately 6,966 unsolved murders since 1999 to present. Obviously, those numbers tend to grow. Some go down as a result of cases. But what happened is the majority of those to date are in murder books, and they're paper books that we have since the inception of time, and that's the way we do our murder investigations. What this effort was or is to digitize those books. Take the books in conjunction with the FBI. The books are digitized, and then they're put into a database called BIDMIS. As the hope is and the belief is that by putting them into BIDMIS, not only will they not sit there, but they'll have an ability to be queried and do link analysis. So as time goes on, we will be able to look at the cases, see similarities, and determine and if there are relationships in cases that will help us solve them. The majority of them have already gone through forensically, so now it would be other things that look at it. Currently, I have cold case investigators that do that, but the issue is if you're looking at one case is without having an ability to query other ones, you have to go through each book and look at the similarities to see if there are or the clues that will give you a lead as to who the suspect is that's responsible for them. This also gives us some idea of what the physical evidence is in those cases and whether forensics that were not available during the time of the murder or that time and are available today that would help us analyze things that, again, lead us to a new system. The money that has been appropriated, the $2,500... A
couple zeros over
yeah,
there.
A couple of... $250,000 is a portion of the requirement to refurbish the facility or make the facility...
Which is a total of about $1 million, correct?
Right. It's $1.13 million that it will take to convert the kitchen area and the dining room facilities at the Amundsen Training Facility into a library. What we will do is take the digitized books, be able to put them into the computer system, but not only house the books that have been refurbished so that all the murder books are centrally located, so that once you actually get into the computer system, find the stuff, then you're actually able to take the hard copies out and see if there's additional information that would lend it. So what it's doing is trying to put all this together. Like I said, I currently have cold case investigators that do a lot of this work by hand, but we believe that even contemporary cases, as you've seen, and with this link analysis, would be able to go back and solve things that people are responsible for.
So from an efficiency perspective, you'll have a number of people be able to access without having to drive over to Amundsen.
Correct. The goal of this is that homicide investigators throughout the city would have access as through a coded system on the land and go into it, be able to pull up the case, look at the primary information related to the case in there. And what has happened is everything has been scanned into it so they could actually read the cases, get more information on it, and then if they chose, go down and literally check out the book like you would from a library so that we can follow and track where they are and then be able to go through the books with more detail. The ability to go in and use keywords to search for what you have of as potential clues would then open up a whole group of other cases that you may be able to query from the computer, mm-hmm. But as you choose, go to the books where you would be able to get more information.
Chief,
all of it would be on the computer.
Chief, you're really
system.
Familiar with this and passionate about it. Do you want to say a few words about the importance of it?
Well, it's very important on the investigative side, but it's also important on the personal side. This specific money is to refurbish the facility, which will not only give a place for the books to reside, but also for loved ones to go and to and for us to honor the memory of those that have been killed in the city of Los Angeles. It gives a centralized point. And it also allows the link analysis that Bill talks about, which is huge. No entity anywhere near our size has ever done this, and we have so much data and so little ability to compare. So it's very important. It's very important, and it's a huge step forward uh, in investigative technique in the city of Los Angeles. So very proud of it on a number of levels, and it's we've been digitizing the books for a number of years. You know, we've had a partnership with the FBI to digitize the books in South Bureau, going back to I think when I was there, or just maybe when I was chief of detectives. But the point being is that, you know, we've had to do that catch as catch can without funding, or without significant funding, and you know, this is the start down the path of making you know, victims' families whole in the city of Los Angeles. And of course, you know, every homicide you solve, you know, you prevent additional crime. These folks aren't angels.
As the chief spoke to, there have been already approximately 3,200 books that have been digitized already, so that they're already entered into BIDMIS, and we can query it to a limited degree, but it's primarily at this point South Bureau. Oh, the goal is to take all the books from the entire city from 1990 forward and digitize them so that people have access to them. Again, the trends that you see in past cases, and particularly with the cold case homicides that I'm seeing now, there may be people in custody already for crimes that were committed, but this gives us the ability to go back, look at crimes that they were responsible for in the past that we may not have been able to connect them to, and then this gives us the ability to give the families closure. May not result in additional charges because the sentencing for those individuals may preclude that, but it would obviously give the family an understanding that we've been able to identify the person that was responsible for killing their family.
Chief MacArthur, do you want to say?
Thank you. Chief Beck covered most of what I was going to talk about, and I think that's what's really important. If not for the foundation, we would be in a situation where we couldn't move forward. We've been doing this work with the FBI for the last 3.5 years, and the FBI's goal is to be able to make it even the footprint go national at some point. But most importantly for us down here in Southern California, for us to start to be able to partner with other agencies in this process too. So their goal, which is now our goal, is really to have more of a regional perspective on these cases. And we've got our angels sitting to my right who make a lot of this happen when the city just can't afford to do it. So again, thanks to the foundation for really seeing what kind of impact this type of work can do.
I think also I want to underscore the fact that a sizable kickstart, like yes, you're providing here, brings in other potential players, and I know because I've talked with the chief about it, and he may want to speak more, that there is a strategy for the remaining,
yes,
for the remaining dollars.
It's actually a priority for the foundation at this point, given that the department has spoken that this is a priority for them. So we are in the process of submitting significant proposals. So we're hopeful that we will be able to get to the total cost shortly.
When you do, we have time for you to come back. And
okay.
May I ask a
we'll keep your chairs for you. Go
ahead. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I, too, would like to thank you very much for assisting the department in achieving the priorities. I have a question about, I'm not sure I understand the percentage of to completion that would then be left in terms of how much money is left to raise. What's the total cost of the project, and when do we anticipate it being completely up and running? And that's two. And three, I'm hearing the department and the families. So can you just sort of outline who actually has access to this library?
The way it would work is it's $1.3 million to complete the project, so we're approximately $800,000 short of completing it. The renovation would probably take about a year to get it done, and the process of putting the books and digitizing them is an ongoing thing, and which would probably take about another year to a year and a half, depending on our ability to get the books into the doc lab with the FBI and refurbish them. It doesn't mean that the process wouldn't be online. It would just mean that the information in it would be somewhat limited. It would only be a portion of the cases. It would take probably about another year and a half or so, depending on the pace at which the doc lab can convert these for us.
I'm sorry, so that input process is not necessarily dependent upon the fundraising, or it is?
That's correct. Oh, it is okay. Not. The money that you're looking at that's being requested is actually for the infrastructure, building the facility that would actually house those that are refurbishing the facility that would actually house the books and house the investigators that would work on that and the computer system, some of the computer systems for them to link into the rest of the city.
And so that when you're explaining house the books, you're not talking about paper books. You're talking
yes.
about
yes,
you
what's,
are.
What's happened is the books, the way they sit right now, are taken in. They're sent to the doc lab, which is a part of the FBI. At that point in time, they are digitized, and the books are refurbished so that they stand and will withstand time. And they're brought back, and the original murder book is kept. The original murder book is required once you get into a court case because that's what's used as the primary evidence and it's for that case. Although you've digitized it, in most cases, the courts won't accept that. You have to go to the original documents. So that's why we have to. It's important that we keep those for the historical perspective.
Right. And accessibility.
To the third part as to who has access to it. When we were talking about the family, it would be a place where we could go and explain what's going on there in their case and have rooms that we would be able to sit down and explain the case to them. To actually have access to enter the computer system, they would not.
Okay.
That's still law enforcement realm because it's an ongoing investigation. And you can't allow individuals to have access to that material.
That's what I was confused about. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Mr. Saltzman?
So I thank you for the support. Thank you for the work. And I look forward to the progress it's going to bring about. I also, on the lighter side, look forward to Michael Connolly describing how Harry Bosch is going to use this new system. With that, I would move
excuse
approval
me, Mr.
7K.
Commissioner, we do have one
oh,
public comment. We have Mr. Ted Hayes.
Jackie Lacey conducts her interviews in the hallway. The police department conducts their interviews in the hallway. Where were you conducting these interviews prior to this? In the hallway? Here we go again. It seems there's no way, no manner you construct where people can have privacy and a decent way in which to discuss their problems when it comes to the police department. Now, I don't like the language. It says openly discussed. Does that mean they'll ever have any privacy at all? Will it always be free and open? I don't know. But the most important thing is that homicide is the taking of a human life. Now, when the police take a human life, that's a suspect. But when someone else takes a human life, that's a victim. So will we discuss the police taking human life under these circumstances or not? Now, the consent decree pointed out the police department dragged their feet, they delayed, they stalled, all kinds of things. And Garcetti had to demand that the police department indicate what was happening with Ford because they just would not do it. Because they're waiting for the witnesses to come in and tell them how it really occurred. Well, that was all a farce. But it seemed that unless someone comes to rescue this department, in the manner in which they interrogate, the manner in which they talk to people, discuss things, get information, it won't be done. It requires some outside group to make a donation until you can come to the point where you say, you know what, we should have a location, a place where there can be confidentiality and people can discuss these things, victim or suspect, whatever.
Thank you. There are no other comment cards.
Move approval of item 7K.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Was that it? Was O pulled out or no?
Thank you. We're now on item number 8, regular agenda items. Item
Thank
8,
you, guys.
Item 8D has been pulled by public comment card. Would a commissioner wish to pull any item special for discussion?
I'm interested in item 8A. Otherwise.
So we have 8A and 8D?
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion for approval of the others.
I move approval of the remaining item 8 items.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Let's start with 8D.
8D. Mr. Ted Hayes.
I put in a card for the cleanup. And It wasn't called, but that's okay, because I can talk about it now, even though it is on the agenda. At one time, whenever the incident and the yellow tape went up, all they did was cut it, and it dangled off the poles, and it dangled off whatever, fences and everything. No one would take the yellow tape away. It would always be a location where something had occurred. And it was kind of traumatic to some people, particularly those who knew something about the incident. But it was also very disturbing to have yellow tape dangling off the poles and signs throughout the community. So finally we got the fire department to make sure that at least when paramedics showed up, they would take the yellow tape away. And I mentioned the blood splatters that were on the sidewalk, and I'm glad to see we have contracted, because some of these things can be quite gruesome. You know, police come in on a situation, there's been a body in an apartment for weeks. That's not something for the coroner or police. That's something for people who specialize in these kinds of things. And I'm glad to see what's on the agenda where you contract and you get it done. That's very worthwhile and useful. The other thing is, what is the policy on memorials? Is that street services that takes away the candles and the pictures and things like that? Is there a period of time for memorials on sidewalks, on public sidewalks, or not? It'd be interesting to know, to have someone come in and talk about that, because memorials are always visible in my neighborhood, and some last for quite some time, become tattered and ragged and fall apart, but somehow they should be groomed, and eventually somehow they should be taken away.
Thank you. There are no other comment cards on this item.
Move approval of the item.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We're now on 8A, Department's report dated February 13, 2015, relative to the risk management and harm reduction strategy.
Good morning once again, Commissioners. Arif Ali Khan, Special Assistant for Constitutional Policing for the Los Angeles Police Department. As you're aware, back in December, on December 16th, I provided an outline of the department's strategy to deal with risk and also reduce harms, and also promised that we would be providing the written report that would provide some additional context and additional information, not only about what the strategy entails, but also some of the things that have been ongoing and that we plan to do in the future to implement the strategy. And what I thought would be useful is perhaps to give a brief overview of that strategy, discuss some of the additional information that we've included in the report, which I did not necessarily cover in December, and then talk about some of the actions going forward. As you know from both last month or in December, if you look at existing risk management strategies that most people are aware of, especially in the context of business and insurance and different things, they tend to be very, very broad, unfocused, and unnecessarily complex. And I say unnecessarily because necessary for the department is something that is simple and easy to communicate to 13,000 employees. It is difficult to communicate the concepts. It's difficult to comprehend by those who are responsible for managing that risk and reducing the harm. And significantly, they often don't take into account the inherent purpose of risks in policing. It's often a conflict when you talk to street cops or others to say, hey, you need to manage your risk. Don't take risks, when in fact we pay them, we expect them, and we reward police officers for taking risks that none of us would take because of the inherently dangerous nature of police work. And I think because of all these things, you've seen only limited effectiveness when trying to take these traditional risk management strategies and apply them, not only here at the LAPD, but in many law enforcement agencies throughout the country. As I mentioned before, this is actually the international standard risk management framework. As I mentioned in December, if anybody could tell me what this means, I'd appreciate it. if anybody since then has learned how to comprehend this, now's a good time to let me know. But this is essentially the way that they try to make it very comprehensive and make it apply to everything. And it was very early on when my team and I were looking at this is that we needed to look at something different. We needed to take a different approach. And as I mentioned before, we came across the work of Dr. Malcolm Sparrow, a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School, a former inspector with the UK police, who's done a considerable amount of, and actually a PhD, has a PhD in mathematics and does a lot of statistical analysis about that the framework and the approach, the paradigm, needs to change to something that's much more relatable and really focus on the key issues. And really to focus on actually reducing harm, not just managing risk, but actually reducing something specific and having specific solutions when you figure out what those harms are, and then, of course, measuring if they're effective, rather than taking a very broad, comprehensive approach. Now, why not use the term risk? And I think this is a very, very important and maybe understated aspect of this. But when you think about, when you talk about risk, you talk about something that's going to happen in the future, the probability of something. Very common in the field that I was very involved with is the risk of terrorism. What is the probability that an attack would occur by a particular terrorist group? Or in emergency management, what is the probability that we have a 7.8 earthquake? Those types of things, very futuristic. The thing about risk, though, is that human beings are horrible at judging and assessing risks. And you see that in so many different contexts. If you look at the vaccine situation, if you look at the way people fear flying more than they fear driving, all of those probabilities and risks, even if you provide the data, it's very unlikely to actually influence behavior because humans are terrible at assessing risk, and that's fairly an extensive amount of research and literature and psychology and behavioral economics that show that. And once again, we again ask police officers to take risks, so there's that conflict. And shifting it to something that everybody can relate to, which is the tangible goal of reducing harms and injuries. The other aspect of risk is the probability of something happening. I don't think any of us need to be concerned about the probability that there will be officer-involved traffic collisions. There will be work-related injuries. There will be lawsuits the department has to defend, and that there will be uses of force through the course of policing. So focusing on reducing those recurring issues are going to be important. But the other aspect of it is, what exactly are we trying to reduce? There are many, many different types of risk and a lot of different harm, reputational, economic, a variety of things. But it really comes down to focusing on trying to reduce three things. The first being physical injury. Physical injury to anybody, especially the public and our employees. Any type of activity or concentration of police activity that ends up hurting employees and members of the public need to be the primary focus. And, of course, you see that in injury traffic collision, some uses of force, and then a foot pursuit, just as an example. The second is actually organizational harm, which is a harm I think that we often forget about or tend to ignore, really looking more on the financial. But organizational harm is very important because that is what damages the ability for the police department to pursue its mission of protecting the people of the city of Los Angeles from injuries, from crime. And when there is an organizational harm, it can also diminish the public trust, for example, a use of force that's out of policy. And we have to take into consideration and prioritize that harm as well. And then finally, the type of injury that is often talked about in the context of risk management, which is the financial injury to the city and its taxpayers, the cost of having an officer injured and having medical costs, the cost of litigation, and then sometimes the cost of equipment if there's damage, like in a traffic collision. If you look at the claims and lawsuits, which has been the major concern since the department is so large, if you look between 2009 and 2013, this is just the rough approximation of how many dollars have been paid in lawsuit payouts. What's instructive here is that it's relatively even between the three areas, police liability being those that involve uses of force, employment within the workplace context, and roughly about the same when you compare those two. But if you take this and you apply each of those injuries, you can see that the way we prioritize this is to look at those police activities that not only have that financial injury that you saw on the last slide, but also have significant physical or organizational injuries that occur. And from that, we've decided to really focus in on these four areas of uses of force, officer-involved traffic collisions, work-related injuries, and workplace misconduct. However, it's not just those in a broad context. We really want to laser into those that are actually causing either physical, organizational, and financial injury. So, for example, it's not the every use of force is not going to necessarily result in those three injuries. However, there are going to be a universe that do. And really figuring out what those are and being able to intervene is going to be important. Officer-involved traffic collisions, we'll talk a little bit more in a second, but work-related injuries and workplace misconduct, really focusing on those that matter if we want to have a real and meaningful impact. So the idea here is to really focus on the harms, finding specific solutions to reduce those specific measurable harms that cause any of those three injuries, in most cases all three, and also looking at solutions that result in immediate short-term and mid-term reductions. Because if you look at more of the comprehensive approaches, they tend to be very, very long-term, and it's very difficult to find any impact, and if there is an impact, it would take quite some time for it to take effect. And what I call tactical harm reduction based on the data. In December, I showed up till 2013, as you can see here, these are the officer-involved traffic collisions between 2009 and 20. Actually, it's 14. The title there is, I forgot to change it. Simply to show that we're basically looking at about 6 years' worth of data which we can rely on. It's very important as we go through this to make sure that we're validating the data as we go along. It is possible to go back further, but additional work, and we really want to look at sort of recent events because that would show what's going on out in the field currently. And you can see that there's, at least from this chart, you would notice a steep reduction. However, the issue here is that this is interesting, but of those 100 that have been reduced, what type of traffic collisions are they? Are they injury? Are they non-injury? Because if they're non-injury, and remember that at the LAPD, any type of traffic collision, whether you back up into a post or you're involved in a major traffic collision, must be reported. So there's a significant number of these traffic collisions that have no injury that we'll talk about. But more importantly is, are we looking at the right numbers? And when you compare year to year, according to here, this is the total number. The real issue is how much are we driving and what's the accident rate per 100,000 miles? And as you can see from this, it's basically leveled out. And it is not that much lower than the accident rate in 2009. Therefore, this is something that we want to make sure we're looking at the right numbers to tell if we're truly having an impact, because the number of miles driven can go up and down. In December, also, we provided the overall numbers of about 55 million miles that were driven in the prior year. Since then, as we dug through the data, we realized we wanted to take out rentals and leased vehicles because the system in place to record the mileage is not as easily validated as it is for the regular fleet. So it roughly goes, I believe, to about 45 million miles that were driven last year. But it does show that it's sort of leveled off, and that is something that we need to obviously continue to reduce. The other thing is, what are the harms that are created? An example with the traffic collisions, obviously there's injuries. In about 12% of the cases, we have some level of injury to the public. In 15% of the cases, we've had some level of injury to an employee, either as a driver or as a passenger. During this time period, not necessarily directly related to the incidents that occurred during the year, which is always the challenge. You could have an accident that happened in 2013, but in 2014, somebody files a claim. So it's not as if accident occurred, claim is filed for workers' comp. But about 1,300 claims, and often there are multiple claims for the same individual who might have been injured. And then the work-related injury costs of about $24 million when you calculate the medical costs and the time away from work, but the department and the city is still paying. Just going back, and I apologize, this does not include 2014 statistics, but just to be illustrative of, if you look at the overall number of traffic collisions, what you really want to do is make sure you're looking at the ones that cause injury, because those are the most likely ones that you're going to have other additional costs, including litigation. And as you can see from this, about 12% have some level of injury. And some of these may overlap. But as you can see, we have K injuries, which are deaths, aggravated injuries, which are visible injuries, other visible injuries like contusions and things like that, and then complained of injuries, which get a little bit larger. So this is how that breaks down. So if we spend a lot of time focusing on the other non-injury traffic collisions, we could have a significant reduction, perhaps maybe, let's say, a 10% reduction. But it really won't matter. It's just a reduction in paperwork and maybe some fender benders that don't need to be repaired. But really our focus has to be on the injury traffic collisions and digging into that data. But how do we do that? Obviously, there are certain policies and procedures, and the commission recently looked and approved a special order improving the system of adjudication for officer-involved traffic collisions, and those are very important. But the reality is we need to get information from people who are closer to the ground, what I call the tactical harm reduction. At the ground level, how are specific things that we could do to improve safety belt compliance? What are the specific things we can do to improve the safety of motorcycles when they're being driven? Because those, obviously, when there's a traffic collision, result in significant injury. What are those specific things? And they're not going to come from me, and I dare say they're not going to come from most of the command staff, who probably haven't been on a motorcycle except for Chief Beck in quite some time. But it's really about that tactical problem solving. And I mentioned sort of the
best model.
I'm sorry?
I'm a bad model.
Yeah, all right. That's true. We won't look at your medical costs as part of this. But untying the knots, which is really about problem solving, I think this is a really good metaphor that Dr. Sparrow came up with, is that, you know, really we're trying to look at what are the things that need to be unraveled, and how do we do that? And it's not like you're just going to go and pull it tight and hopefully it comes out. It'll take a lot of perspective. You have to look at it different ways. You have to tug. You have to pull. And if we get the right people to do this, hopefully we'll get it unraveled, a solution that will ultimately allow us to move on to the next knot. Because there are going to be some problems that are going to be very knotty. They're going to be very big. There's some that are not. And we want to see how we can approach those in creative ways to solve those problems. And to do so, we'll need to look at the available data. Look at root causes, and there's several systems I had mentioned before about our ability to do that. There's the HVAC system, the Human Factors Analysis and Classification System, which has been very successful in reducing injury and crashes in the aviation sector, and it's been applied in other contexts. Taproot is a system and a program to analyze root causes. And then telematics, which the department is doing by deploying 50 vehicles that allow real-time capturing of data of driving, the speed, the turns, overdriving, seatbelt compliance, a variety of things. And that will actually give us an opportunity to yield data that's not reporting by some other person to analyze where our problems are. And then, of course, using the experts and operators to collaborate. Also importantly is that we have to provide the support structure. We can talk about ambitious programs, but unless we provide the resources and actually a structure to enable that, it would not be helpful. And the idea is, if you look at what harm is, you know, there are opportunities to prevent, there are opportunities to intervene, and then there are opportunities to mitigate. Now, obviously, we want to start as far left as we can, and we don't want to just be in the mitigation section, which is typically how approaches have been. It's about litigation. We've already gotten to the litigation stage, and we're really just trying to figure out how do we mitigate the damage that was caused. But really focusing and trying to look at things all along the way are important. If you look at also, where do you do that and how do you do that? If you look at work-related injuries, and these are the total expenditures, both cost for medical costs as well as the amount of time somebody's out. The way this is classified by the personnel department that maintains all the data regarding workers' comp and work-related injuries is a bit problematic. And part of it is because if you look at the top three expenditures, 27% are considered multiple injuries, 25 are considered strains, and 16 are considered sprains for the 68%. It would be very difficult for us to figure out, well, what do we do about multiple injuries? But that's the way they categorize it. But the thing is, once we do, and we are working with both personnel department and the controller's office, which has been doing an audit of the LAPD and I believe the fire department's workers' compensation, we've been working very closely with them in getting the data for this analysis, is that those are the three areas that we really need to focus. Because if we do that, we're likely to have yield a greater impact. Now, there are obviously some very terrible and other types of ailments that there are costs associated with that for police officers. For example, cancer, vascular issues, and then the all other category. But the reality is if we could spend all our time focusing on cancer and vascular diseases, of which could be a number of factors that cause those terrible illnesses, and likely not have a very immediate impact, which is why we need to drill in more with the strains and sprains and also the multiple injuries. This is also true in the data that's currently available on causes. The number one cause is cumulative, a bit vague, and we'll have to dig into that more. Other miscellaneous. So there you got 47% are two categories that are currently kept that are very difficult to ascertain what they're talking about, and motor vehicles, which is a little bit more descriptive. And then the remaining being about 44%. But once again, the top three areas, once we are able to look at it, is about 56% of the total in terms of what those causes are that cause the most financial harm. So how do we do all of this? Because obviously there's a lot of work to do, and it's going to be complicated. The first thing is we're going to put together problem-solving teams, and these will be in the four areas of harm reduction of uses of force, employee-involved traffic collisions, work-related injuries, and workplace conflict. These will include people on the ground level to come together and problem-solve, actual motor officers, actual patrol officers, actual detectives, whatever it would be, having that group come together and be given specific tasks. And as you'll see in the report, I'm sure there are specific questions that we will expect every problem-solving team to actually answer. What is the harm? How do we measure it? And all that entire process. We've also created the new, the chief has, the Risk Management and Legal Affairs Group in my bureau with the new CEO, Mike Himes, who's seated in the back, and you've met as the new risk manager and the team that's next to him. And in addition, something that I wasn't sure we'd be able to do as quickly as the chief has enabled, which is create an actual division within the Risk Management and Legal Affairs Group that'll have support, in fact, personnel specifically dedicated to facilitating and pushing through those four areas of harm. The structure will be based around the areas of harm rather than vice versa, and it won't necessarily be organized around functional needs. It'll be around what our objectives are. And then also enabling a risk management analysis and evaluations unit that has been doing a lot of the statistical analysis up till now. I also mentioned that the Office of Operations has agreed to have risk management coordinators in all 21 areas, which will be very important for us to push information out and also have people in place to help implement this. And then the ombuds is also being transferred over to the Risk Management and Legal Affairs Group to help facilitate our alternative dispute resolution program to reduce workplace conflict and some other issues. This is essentially the org chart. I think the important thing here is that now what we would do is under one command, we would have both legal affairs and risk management division. Risk management division, and as I mentioned before, legal affairs is much too far down the line. It's the harm has already occurred, the injury has already occurred, we're mitigating it. But having these two divisions now, with the risk management side of it being about prevention and intervention, working together and feeding each other what lessons learned are going to be very important. And then the ombuds is also there that will be reporting directly to Mr. Himes, who is a commander-level civilian employee. And then in particular in the risk management division, essentially there will be two sections, the analysis and evaluations unit that will be doing statistical analysis and what we call the operational unit that will have REMAX support, which will fairly pretty much stay intact, and then the implementation unit and investigation unit that will be working very closely together in driving forward the four reductions in the four areas. Why do we think this is going to work? I think, as I mentioned before, it's very consistent with the culture and mission of the Los Angeles Police Department, as well as other law enforcement agencies, which is about protecting the public and reducing harm to them through by protecting them against crime, but also harm that could be caused by these types of activities. It's a problem-solving model, which is consistent with the institutionalized nature of community and problem-oriented policing. And then, of course, it focuses on the professionalism and tactical excellence of the LAPD. As I mentioned before, if I just say the word tactical, LAPD officers listen. If you say strategic or policy, not so much. But it's about that approach of actually, at a tactical level, trying to be more precise and trying to solve problems at that level. is one of the reasons why we think this approach is likely to be more effective. In the report, as outlined and recommended by Dr. Sparrow, is you still need to have, in addition, different systems. We're going to have the resources and some of the personnel in place fairly soon, but they have to develop systems to institutionalize this, and this is the list of those, including everything from how do you nominate specific problems all the way toward to how do you make sure that the lessons learned are institutionalized and maintained. Once again, these would be the four harm reduction areas: uses of force, employee-involved traffic collisions, work-related injuries, and workplace conflict. And then, of course, there are always going to be challenges, resource constraints. The chief has been very generous about appointing a new captain for the division and also reallocating some personnel in the department to support this effort. These are not new authorities. They're not new police officers who are being hired. They are officers who have to, unfortunately, be taken from other parts of the department, and we plan to make good use of them. Our analytical capabilities are limited. Our data and the systems that we have are some antiquated and some a bit disjointed. However, we are getting outside help from research institutions and universities to come in and help us with that analysis, and we think that's going to be very promising, and they'll be able to provide information and correlations and other insights that we would not see ourselves. But very importantly, I think it's important to recognize that we have to be willing to experiment and fail. This is a new approach. This is involving trying things and trying to see if they work, and necessarily there will be failure. But I believe that by doing so, we can fail forward and actually make progress and learn from what we try to do. And then also being willing to look at very tactical solutions to large strategic problems and not go towards the tendency of wanting to do something that is so broad, so comprehensive that it may sound good, may sound like a campaign to deal with something, but may not be effective. Here's the timeline. This is similar to what I provided last December, which is obviously presenting the report that you have before you. Our risk management legal affairs group should be activated in the sense that we have some people in place, and we'll take that structure by deployment period 3, which is next week. We also have some data workbooks. Currently, it's about 40 pages that goes into detailed analysis of all the four areas that the analysis team is working on. We hope to have that in a shape so that once we form the problem-solving teams by the middle of March, we can hand that to them as a starting point to look at where areas they could focus on. Once they're together, we want proposals about specific solutions to go to an executive committee, which is yet to be formed but should be by then, and then actually go into implementation and evaluation. And then what we hope is, based on the results and based how this approach works, then come up with something that could be a more longer-term strategic plan, and then, of course, continuing and implementing the ongoing interventions that we've outlined and that have been ongoing for a while. And so with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
I have a question.
Yes.
I know in harm reduction strategy, how are you defining, I read in the first paragraph, but how are you defining harm reduction strategy as it relates to law enforcement? I'm familiar with it in terms of public health and HIV and drug abuse strategies, and as they came up with those policies, it was very difficult to implement, to train us, and then implement it in the community, and there was conflict with police. So how are you defining it?
Sure, and that's actually a great example. If you look at the public health model and dealing with all sorts of injuries or harms that occur in society, whether it's gang violence, whether it's disease, whether it's a variety of societal ills, it's really about trying to go and figure out what is the root cause. What is the root cause of something, and what is a way to intervene that'll have the biggest effect? I mean, if you go back to just the idea of infections, you know, figuring out what is the source of the infection and what are simple things that you can do to intervene. Sometimes it's washing your hands. Sometimes it's encouraging the identification of symptoms, et cetera. We have to take a similar approach, in my opinion, on the specific problems about law enforcement in those four areas. So if the issue in traffic collisions is really about speed, then how do we look at specific issues to intervene with that? As over the weekend, as I was thinking of some of these things, we have to also take into consideration reality. And For example, in a pursuit, we ask the police officers to chase after an armed suspect. And we want them, and they'll inherently have to go quickly to do that because the armed suspect will be going on. And they're very focused on doing that. They're very focused on their safety and trying to apprehend the suspect. I think sometimes it would be difficult to assume that those officers engaged in that high-stress environment are going to then have some sort of critical thinking going through their mind and say, maybe we should slow down. However, that is why we have a supervisor that's required to go, we have an air support, we have the watch commander commanding, because they won't have the same sort of vision and the same kind of focus, and it's their responsibility to say, we're going too fast, go into tracking mode, or pull back. That's an example of recognizing the real issue and figuring out an intervention that will hopefully reduce that.
Yeah, I guess just to follow up,
sure.
I guess for me, when you're really looking at changing human behavior and then looking at the consequences of whatever that behavior is, right?
Yes.
So with a police officer, they're trained to deal with situations in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And eventually I'll get all that you just presented to us. Mm-hmm. But, I think it's going to be challenging. So...
Absolutely, and it's about changing human behavior, but first and foremost is recognizing why is that behavior the way it is right now, and not assuming that we can simply issue a policy and all of a sudden change the behavior. There are reasons why officers don't wear their seatbelt. There are reasons why pursuits can sometimes get out of control. We need to figure out why that is and what are the interventions at the tactical level that can be implemented to reduce the potential harm. Yep.
Thanks so much for this report. Mr. Alakon, I'm really impressed by how thoughtful and critical this approach is, both in the report, which is really comprehensive, and your presentation. I very much appreciate it. I think that the hardest to quantify among the injury categories that you've outlined for us, the three injury categories that provide the overview for this risk management approach, is the organizational injury. The other two are easier to quantify because the data, to a great extent, can be number-driven. But the organizational injury is narrative-driven, or that's how I imagine the data to be. If you could comment on that, and also like how that department or that special committee will undertake an analysis of data that's inherently narrative-driven.
Sure. And just to clarify, the problem-solving teams will be oriented around type of harm. So it'll be around traffic collisions, et cetera. But they will be looking at ways to prevent, intervene, and mitigate physical, organizational, and financial harm. And I agree with you in terms of the things where if you wanted to find a metric or a measurement, organizational harm is the most difficult to do so. We thought it was important to put in there, though, because, one, it's often ignored as a real harm. Two, It's a challenge, but perhaps there are ways we can measure that. You know, one of the challenges is how do you measure public trust of a law enforcement agency? And as the chief has asked us to do, we're looking at different methods. Maybe it's survey methods, et cetera. And so there may be some creative ways to do that. I don't have the answer, but, you know, perhaps some of these folks who will be much closer to the issue, bringing in senior lead officers, community relations officers, and being creative could yield something that would help. But I agree with you 100% that it's probably the most challenging. Mm-hmm.
And then with a risk management strategy like this, following up on Commissioner Figueroa-Villa's comments that you need a department that is prepared to change also. And with respect to the organizational harm portion of it, it seems like the challenge will be to persuade departmental members to change when, again, that area is difficult to support rather than by just narrative statements or experiential evidence rather than, you know, data. I'm fully on board with your approach as you've outlined, and any support that I can provide, I'm happy to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you. I too want to thank you for the report, the presentation, this has been a long effort. And as I said in December, I feel like we are on track. And that's a change for me. And I appreciate all the work you put into this. Certainly appreciate the chief's putting resources into it as well. And I'm impressed that you're talking about new approaches and that you're clearly demonstrating a commitment on the part of the department to actually make these changes. And I consider that to be a change and a welcome one. And I appreciate it very much. I could, as you did, go through the report and say positive things about virtually everything there, but I'm not going to do that other than to say how impressed I am with the report. I do think, as Commissioner Kim or Commissioner Figueroa-Villa has commented, a tremendous amount of work ahead. This is difficult. The key in the end is going to be the implementation, and I think nobody knows that better than you do, but I think we're on the right track. I do have two questions. One relates to the data. The question that we discussed privately, for my benefit of my fellow commissioners, as I looked at the data on many of the charts, it looked to me like 2009, which is the comparison year. That is, most of the, they're not conclusions, but they're statements about what's been happening. Compare 2014 to 2009. And my reading of the charts was that 2009 looked like an anomaly. In many cases, you can the first chart in particular, I think, shows that. And so for example, on that chart, if you compare 2014 906 with 1,074, that's a very different look from comparing 2014 with 2010, which is 923. And so I just asked Mr. Alacant if he would talk about that a little bit to make sure we understand what's happening with the data.
Certainly. And as we discussed last night, the reason 2009 is in there is because that's as far back as we could go with reliable data. And certainly we could go back further. And in fact, based on our discussion, I definitely want to look at 2008 to find out, is 2009 an anomaly? Was it part of an overall trend? And I don't know the answer to that question. With respect to the comparison, it wasn't our intent to suggest that from 2009 to 2014, look, there's this huge reduction. And that's why we have the trend chart, which shows there was a drop in 2010, but it's fairly leveled off. And that's even more clear when you look at another measure, which I think is more instructive, which is the 100,000 miles. The accident rate has pretty much leveled off. And also, if you note from in this chart with the collision rate per 100,000 miles driven, 2009 to 2014 is actually a much less reduction when you take into consideration the accident rate as opposed to the overall number. I think I will be tasked for this particular group to do is, well, why was there that drop in 2009 to 2010? And most importantly, was there a similar reduction in injury traffic collisions? Because that could have been more reporting of fender benders and other things, which is really of no consequence. But we're really trying to look at trends, averages over time, et cetera. And now that we have about 6 years' worth of data, the 2014 data is still coming in. We have more information to look at. What is it we're dealing with, and where could we have the most significant impact?
Thank you. I appreciate that. My second question, in the report, it's page 24, but you have it's the organizational chart for the Office of Special Assistance, and you have a screenshot of that as well. I followed your discussion and description about the risk management legal affairs group and the three entities below that. And it would help me if you would just walk through briefly a sentence or two about on the other side, so the other things that are taking your attention, so we understand that.
Certainly. Well, obviously everything is going to be taking some portion of my attention. When we looked at bringing in a risk manager, I think, as I'd mentioned even early last year, there were various models we were looking at. One was to create a deputy commanding officer for the entire bureau that would be able to have an oversight of all of those things. But what in discussions with the chief we realized was probably most important is have somebody who can handle the day-to-day issues that come up with legal affairs, which is very dynamic, ongoing, and then also somebody who could focus exclusively on trying to set up a whole new division, which is risk management, and then obviously ombuds as well, rather than have somebody who also has to deal with the other myriad issues that I deal with, both from audits and PRD planning and research, which include fairly pretty much every policy that comes before you and that we deal with. In addition, government liaison, which is all of the legislation and issues before the council, and then a variety of other projects that the chief asks me to do. We thought that it would be best to have Mr. Himes solely focused on the risk management related issues, and then I could handle the others and then assist where necessary.
I appreciate that. And then my last question, I noted, I may be mistaken, but I think I'm correct, that in the timeline, I'm sure it's an oversight, there wasn't any listing of reporting back to us. And my understanding is you'll be doing that quarterly. I just wanted to confirm
that. Yes. I was deferring to what the commission would like, but certainly. And my recommendation would be is during those quarterly meetings, in addition to giving you just a general overview, we could pick one of the specific areas of the four, and then report in more in depth about the specific things that are occurring in that area.
Thank you. That makes good sense to me. See, we have a comment.
Yes, we have one.
Excuse me. I just want to say that I am congratulate you on the quality of the report, and I would say that in the time that I've been sitting on the commission, and you've joined the police department, the quality of the reports has improved immensely. I no longer sit through these reading them frustrated. I actually applaud and appreciate what you've done, and I think this is a tremendous amount of work. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
From my perspective, I agree with what everybody said, and I look forward to the implementation because that's everything. And risk management is expensive. I mean, I think correct me if I'm wrong, but the numbers that you show in here show payment for claims and suits and settlements, but there are additional costs. I mean, loss of work hours, overtime, litigation costs, all of those add up. And, you know, my hope in this is that the implementation, and I think that body cameras will be a help, I hope. A big help, that a portion of these savings that will accrue to the city of Los Angeles will come back to this department to help us with the things that we need, like our salary increases for officers and things like that. So I think there's nothing like when you talk about how people are going to react, there's nothing like positive reinforcement for any behavior changes, because you may be identifying some things that require behavior changes. So I look forward to the implementation of this and the fruits and the department receiving benefits from getting it done as well.
Thank you, okay. Commissioner. And I do want to thank the commission. I've been here for about 11 months now, and the commission's support on this and other issues has been very helpful in your suggestions and different areas, and I look forward to your feedback in the future. Thank you.
Okay. And the one public comment card, Mr. Hayes.
Did I understand this, the presenter to say that human beings are very poor at calculating risk? Really, sir, who does it better? What species? Now, police officers are not dressed to perform. You recall 2 weeks ago when they chased down this errant driver and had to tackle and bring him down. Well, they didn't tackle him on astroturf or grass or even a pad. They tackled him on concrete. There are 7 bones in the knee. The orthopedics don't know what they do. But Kobe can tell you when one goes wrong, it's pretty bad. So when officers in their uniform have to tackle someone down on concrete, something's going to be damaged. The elbows, the knees, whatever. If they slide, they're going to get skin abrasions, things like that. Now, I can't recommend we put officers in knee pads like they do in foreign countries with military people. But really, a lot of the damage is done by what they normally do when they have to go after a rabbit and take him down. So I recall that sometimes some officers had these pads on the elbows like college professors have. Well, I don't know whether that's standard uniform or not, but it's not very much protection, whatever it happens to be. So a lot of injury is based upon the fact that officers are not dressed to perform the real rugged things, the real hands-on type things with suspects, and that's unfortunate. I just wonder whether or not you're ever told what an officer does behind the wheel of a car. He's not watching traffic. He's looking at the people on the sidewalk. He's surveying the community. He's looking for outstanding suspects. So that's why you have lots of traffic accidents, and there's no way to avoid it.
Mr. President, it gives me great pleasure to move approval of this item.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're now on item number 9, public comment. We have 3 public comment cards. We have Mr. Ted Hayes, Craig Lally, and Bill Watkins.
I just want to reestablish what I was confused when I was talking about something, but I can talk about it now because it's not an agenda item. I was discussing the disappearance thing, and that weighs upon me very heavily because last week I went to Discovery, and they made a mistake with my address, and the mail they sent me came back, but they also contended that there was no record for my arrest in a period of time. Well, I know I was arrested. And I was just wondering how far and how long is it going to go. I know you're probably tired of hearing about it. But as I pointed out, if I don't get fed, I will pass out. Now, each instance I passed out, the paramedics come and they take me away. And that's the only portion of the paved trail that might be intact, as I pointed out. 77th Street says no record. Metropolitan Detention says no record. The Sheriff's Department, Wall Street, says no record. The Medical Department says no record. Everyone says no record. We can't have something like that happening in our society where we can actually disappear people and it's so well coordinated and connected that it goes all the way up and through and around the chain. That's very disturbing. Not the fact that I collapsed and might have broke my skull open. It's the fact that the operation is so incredible to believe this happens in my country. But it did, and it does, and it's ongoing. But I hope I'll get to the bottom of it, and I hope you'll correct the situation where this sort of thing can be collaborated, coordinated. Thank you.
Craig Lally.
Welcome, sir, to the new president of the Los Angeles Police Protective League.
Thank you, sir.
Happy you're here.
Thank you very much, sir. I just want to make one comment about the risk management that we were talking about earlier. Mr. Eric Hunt was describing in his presentation there. I think one important aspect has been left out, the Protective League. I understand it's about dollars and cents and how to reduce those dollars and cents, but these people are human beings, especially the officer and officer lawsuits that go on. You know, before they even get to a lawsuit, the process is they call one of the directors, myself or one of the other directors, and they come up with a story. And their story is whatever it is. And then what we usually do is we farm it out to one of our 35 attorneys for an hour of consultation. What I would really like from the police commission, let's try to fix this stuff before it goes to lawsuits. I think we're a very important part of this. These are our officers, and I think a lot of this stuff is about dollars and cents, and they don't understand the human part of this stuff. So I think you got to start with us. I'll be happy to have any of our 35 attorneys, our assistant general counsel, our counsel, or anybody on our board talk to ERIF prior to this stuff going to lawsuit. It's very, very important. I think it's the most important part of this whole system that he just presented. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Bill Watkins.
Good morning. Nice to be back. I avoided the January meetings. There was a lot of protest and insanity. I don't know what happened, and really glad it's really calm today, and looks like a nice meeting. Thanks. I guess whenever I show up, for better or for worse, I'm just a voice of beware the lethal force. I am a Christian, and I read the Bible. I'm guilty of that. And I'm careful. I saw that LA Times training video. When you start with a holster and you start yelling at your recruits with an angry drill sergeant, you're going to have you reap what you sow, and you're going to have a product that's sometimes a little insensitive to people who just aren't doing well today. And that's what we got. When we got crime, sometimes I think it's just people having a bad day. And I want, when I come, just maybe I'm just someone to hopefully help us rethink and think how we can help those people having a hard day. And let's please really think about how we cannot judge them on the street. And the ultimate form of judging is to take their life away, is to aim for the torso. I believe in those people even doing wrong today. I know they can turn around. So I went for broad strokes today on my 2 minutes because I wasn't here in the last few meetings. And so thanks for all your continued service. And if there's ever a job I can do to help you guys out, I'd sure show up. I need to make amends for misdemeanor crime and growing up drinking underage and being a real zero. All I did was play sports and drink alcohol. It's not good enough. And I do comedy and music, and I look forward to even giving that if there's a time for that. God bless you, and let's have a nice day. Peace.
Thank you. We're now on item number 10, closed session. Please let the record reflect there is a clerical error on the item. It should read complaint file number 14-000740. The Board of Police Commissioners will now recess into closed session to discuss item number 10A1 in accordance to Government Code 54957.